From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Prophecy and World Events with Patrick Cook. Millions are waiting for this one, but here's what's happening. I felt an earthquake, and so did a lot of other people in Southern California, plus a handful of aftershocks. 5.4 on the Richter scale, 30 miles south of Palm Springs. As a matter of fact, this email in from Krista, she said, we did have this 5.4 earthquake, George. I felt it in San Diego. It was only 5 miles deep. We all heard it before we felt it. First roll was shallow. As it continued, it really jerked, and the second roll lasted about 20 seconds, and it felt like it was on a different fault line than the big 7.2 in northern Mexico on Easter Sunday. More aftershocks coming. We'll be tuned in to Coast to Coast. Well, the federal government is launching an expansive program dubbed Perfect Citizen to detect cyber assaults on private companies and government agencies running such critical infrastructure as the electricity grid and nuclear power plants. The surveillance by the National Security Agency, the government's chief eavesdropping agency, would rely on a set of sensors deployed in computer networks for critical infrastructure that would be triggered by unusual activities, suggesting an impending cyber attack. Alarmed by a rash of near collisions involving airliners, the government is trying to find out why air traffic controllers and pilots are making so many dangerous errors. In recent months, there have been at least a half a dozen incidents in which airliners came close to colliding with other planes or helicopters, including in Chicago, Houston, San Francisco, Burbank, California, Anchorage, Alaska. In some cases, pilots made last-second changes in direction after cockpit alarms went off, warning of an impending crash. The Obama administration has asked a federal court in Louisiana to reinstate the ban on deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico despite the moratorium. They're saying that, hey, this is an unprecedented emergency because of the BP oil spill. In Los Angeles, police have charged a man in the city's grim sleeper serial killings after decades of frustrated investigations into at least 11 slayings dating back 25 years. 57-year-old Lonnie Franklin Jr. has been charged with 10 counts of murder, one count of attempted murder, and special circumstance allegations of multiple murders that could make him eligible for the death penalty if convicted. Detectives have spent years probing slayings between 1985 and 2007 in which the killer targeted young black women and one man. The attack was dubbed the Grim Sleeper because he apparently took a 14-year hiatus from his crimes. Dr. Catherine Remsland teaches forensic psychology at DeSalle University in Pennsylvania and has published 27 books, including The Criminal Mind. Catherine, tell us a little bit about the serial killer search. How come it takes so long?
Well, they really traced down a lot of leads, but I think initially when the early killings happened in the 1980s, they weren't taking it as seriously, and there was negligence in terms of the evidence. So once you have a cold case, it takes much longer to track down leads.
How many serial killers is the FBI estimating walking all around this country right now?
I don't think they're giving estimates, but it's probably around 15 to 20.
And how many are they killing? And what determines a serial killer, Catherine?
Well, a serial killer, it used to be that it was at least three incidents in three separate locations. However, in 2005, the FBI changed that to two, so that makes it a little bit different. So only two murders, two incidents, two locations, typically.
You know, what's frightening, this guy hasn't been convicted yet, but neighbors describe this man as being friendly, quiet. Nobody would ever know.
It's not unusual.
Man, that's scary.
They often will pass as normal among people and live quietly. And in fact, the more they act like typical people, that's actually part of their plan is so that they deflect suspicion on them.
What triggers these people, Catherine?
Well, I don't know enough about him because there's not one thing that triggers people like this. There's not usually in something like that where somebody is attacking prostitutes, it can be anger, it can be a sense of a mission that they have to eliminate such people from the world. But we don't know enough about him to know what could be triggering him.
Is there a common denominator? Has something happened to these people when they were kids?
No, there's no common denominator.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, thanks, Catherine, for that. A male spectator fell from the second deck onto the field-level seats while leaning to catch a fall ball at the Rangers ballpark during the fifth inning Tuesday night's game between Cleveland Indians and the Texas Rangers. The Rangers executive vice president of communications said the spectator was able to move all his extremities and was responsive to paramedics. Nelson Cruz of the Rangers had fouled a pitch into the club level in section 235 along the first baseline. The ball hit a seat behind the spectator, who was reaching over to snag it before losing his balance, tumbling backward onto the seats about 30 feet below. The man was taken by ambulance to a hospital. I looked up and saw him starting to come down. He hit the luxury box area and came straight down, said the Cleveland left fielder Trevor Crowe. It's one of the scariest things I've ever seen, he said. A motivation day organized by an Italian estate agency backfired when 9 staff had to be taken to hospital after walking on hot coals. Motivational trainer Alexandro Di Prima said the 9 salespeople suffered light burns, none seriously hurt. Firewalking helps people overcome their fears, seek new challenges, and understand most of what they see as their limits of self-infliction. He said the hotel near Rome, where the exercise was held, used the wrong kind of wood and some artificial coal without him knowing. Doctors said the injuries could take up to 10 days to heal. The undersea world isn't quite as we thought, according to a New Zealand researcher who has found out that fish can talk to each other. Fish communicate with noises, including grunts, chirps, and pops, according to this marine scientist. He says all fish can hear, but not all can make sounds, but many do. Fish are believed to communicate with each other for different reasons, including attracting mates, scaring off predators, or just trying to balance themselves. In our investigation, we found some audio of a talking fish called Mr. Limpet.
Henry, is that you?
Don't you recognize me, Bessie?
Henry, you really are
a fish? Yes, Bessie, you can say it.
I remember that when I was a kid. It was an incredible Mr. Limpet played by the late Don Knotts. The psychic octopus was right again. Spain goes to the finals, defeating Germany 1-0, and now goes to the World Cup finals to play the Netherlands. The octopus has predicted the results of the national team during this tournament, and it has been correct so far, including all 5 of the previous games. The broadcast of its pick between Germany and Spain live on national television when he picked Spain made people very nervous and alarmed in Germany. Paul the octopus has not pick the final winner yet, but rest assured, Vegas will be watching him when he does. Ringo Starr turned 70 years old today, the Beatles celebrating the occasion with a private event at the Hard Rock Cafe in New York, followed by a performance with his band, the All Star Band, at Radio City Music Hall. He said, as far as I'm concerned, in my head, I'm 24. Ringo Starr, 70 years old today. R. Gary Patterson follows music like nobody else. 70 years old, Gary?
It's hard to believe, isn't it, George?
Unbelievable.
I remember when Paul McCartney wrote, "When I'm 64, you never thought they'd ever get there." You know, you just couldn't think of him being old. But 70 years old, still rocking, and he's taking his band out on tour this summer. I mean, that's just great.
You know, I had an opportunity to see some video clips of Paul McCartney and Ringo. Paul's up there in age, too. I think he's 68, something like that. I mean, you still think of these guys as 20-some years old, don't you?
Well, you do, and it's, you know, what? How long has it been since the Ed Sullivan Show in 64? Has it been like 46 years or something like that since they were on television? And changed the world, it changed the music, changed culture everywhere. I mean, there's never been a band that's had the impact. And poor Ringo, a lot of people always said he wasn't good enough as a drummer for the Beatles, but he was the perfect drummer for the band. And even Paul McCartney sent him a postcard saying that he was the greatest drummer in the world, especially for the Beatles. And I know they had some hard times, and Ringo had actually left the Beatles on the White Album and came back. So, you know, he was perfect for the band, and you know, you have a great appreciation when you listen to Ringo's drumming.
Hey, Gary, hang with me for about 10 minutes. I want to come right back with you. We're going to take this break, and I want to talk with you about some things that are going on in the industry as it affects these people, like the Michael Jacksons, and then we'll go into open lines a little bit later on this hour. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're going to have open lines for you in about 15 minutes. We've got our Gary Patterson. Gary, why are these superstars so self-destructive? What is wrong with them?
Well, you know, I think some are at the pinnacle of fame where you feel like you're 10 foot tall and bulletproof, that, you know, natural laws don't actually affect you. And I think there's a tour mentality, and I think that happens in a lot of cases. And you know, when reality hits, it's usually too late. But you know, I think that has a lot to do with it.
You know, I was watching the courtroom video of Lindsay Lohan getting sentenced yesterday, and there she was crying and stuff, and you know, and I couldn't stop but think, you know what, I think this judge probably has saved her life somehow by doing this.
Well, you know, I agree. I think that sometimes, you know, you have to realize that the laws are made for everyone and not just you, and that you can get away from it. And, you know, sometimes it's a nice reminder that, you know, we're all in this together and that everyone is bound by the same rules and regulations. And, you know, it could be something that would save her life, and or anyone, you know, who sometimes can be a little self-abusive and, you know, just to sit back and focus and get on with your life and build on a sturdy foundation.
You know, I know it's got to be frustrating for a lot of people in the industry, Gary. You know, they go to a restaurant on the weekends and they come outside, and there are 20 photographers chasing them into their car, you know, and in some cases pretty darn rudely. And, you know, they get in and they're whisked away and off they go. You know, there's got to be a lot of tension and a lot of stress. But that's not a reason to have to be so destructive, is it?
No, not at all. But that's the price of fame. You know, I mean, you work your whole life to be famous, to be recognized, and then it becomes a great excess. And then when you escape from it, probably the worst thing is no one cares. When you walk out of the restaurant, no one's waiting for your picture.
So, yeah, exactly. You've got to bring your own camera.
Yeah, bring your own camera and say, take my shot, put this in the paper. And but that's the sad part. I mean, it's a terrible price to pay. And once you become famous and you reach the height of your career, then I guess you expect it. And then I think it is pretty tragic that if no one cares and you're walking out and there's no publicity. So, you know, it's a funny thing, fame. And you ask for it and there's consequences that come with it. And I think a lot of people would accept those consequences to be famous.
And then there are people like John Fogerty and Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top who just, you know, live a stellar life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're tremendously professional for what they do. Gibbons recognized all the time, you know, that long red beard that he's got.
Yeah.
Yet it hasn't gone to their heads either. So some of them are weak. You know, some of them can't handle what they're doing. Others just thrive on it and they're okay.
Yeah, I think some of them believe their own press clippings too much, you know, and they get into it. But when you're talking about Billy Gibbons and artists, you know, who are so well set in their values and great players you know, they don't need the notoriety. I mean, I'm sure they enjoy being recognized and they like to sell tickets, but they're not going to be in that self-destructive mode when they go out. And John Fogerty is another good choice.
The new
they're
superstar.
Survivors.
Oh, they are. The new superstar is Lady Gaga. I mean, she's everywhere. Her songs just go off the charts. You know, her music's played in nightclubs. It's everywhere. She seems to be controlling herself.
Yeah, she does, and she knows how to use publicity well. You know, I know that she created a little stir with the New York Yankees when she was there not too long ago. But you know, she can realize that you can use publicity for your own advantage. You know, it's not always a negative thing.
That's right.
And it can set your star. So Lady Gaga, you know, she's a brilliant artist. Sounds great. So good luck to her.
How did she get created?
Well, you know, I think that first of all, you got to have the talent. You know, you got to be able to do something. It's not always, you know, putting on makeup, putting on outrageous outfits, but, you know, to have the talent, to have the charisma to get on a stage and produce. And the most important thing in the recording industry today is to sell product, and she's been doing that. So, you know, to create Lady Gaga and to go out and to appear in so many avenues and worldwide, and to create it and to create her name and a product. I mean, she is doing basically like the Beatles when everyone else started. You know, publicity and can be your friend, and it can really make you. She's pushed all the right buttons, so good luck to her.
Yeah, there are a lot of superstars out there today, but she seems to have really pushed herself to the forefront, hasn't she?
She has, and you know, that's super. And I think she's going to be here for a while too.
Gary, tell us about this theory that you brought to us many years ago, the death and the number of 27 for some of these superstars.
Well, that was sort of a chilling thing when I was writing Hellhounds on Their Trail, and later I put it in and updated the story in Take a Walk on the Dark Side, my third book. But, you know, when I was researching Robert Johnson, and I was fascinated with the Crossroad myth, and then obviously, you know, Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix. I was researching them and their lives, and then I noticed that they all had something in common. They died at the age of 27. And after we did the show one night, I had a call from our good friend Ian Punnett, who had talked to someone who was doing a thing in statistics at the university, and he had taken all rock star ages, and starting with Ritchie Valens, who was only 17 when he died in a plane crash with Buddy Holly, he put them all together at all their ages, the ones who made it to ripe old age and the ones who died terribly young. And the statistics showed that over 42 rock stars died at the age of 27, and it was the number one age for the death of rock stars. And I remember I read an interview in BMI with John Mayer, and they asked him in the interview, they said, John, what do you think your greatest accomplishment was? And he said, well, I made it past 27.
Yeah, so true. What's new with you, Gary Pettison?
Well, I'm having a good time.
You always have a good time.
I always have a good time, George. And I just got back from Florida, and I'm working on another book. So I'm doing a little research and writing, and I'm going to do some internet radio broadcast, and we're going to have some fun. We'll find some people we can have on Coast to Coast with us that's going to rock it out, my friend.
Absolutely. When you were down in Florida, what was the mood like because of the Gulf leak?
Well, you know what I did? I went to the East Coast.
Yeah, that's smart.
You know, when I was little, we always used to go to Daytona, and you know, because my aunt lived in Jacksonville, still does. And so I drove down to Daytona and stayed a week and stayed on the beach on the East End and just had a great time. I knew that there wasn't going to be any issues with the oil, but I had a friend who, Stephen, who just went down and stayed on the West Coast in Destin, and the oil had just completely ruined the beach. And the condo that he had rented, the business actually gave them their money back, and they left and went to Orlando. So on the West Coast, it's pretty bad, and that's sad. But, you know, I mean, those beaches are beautiful all the way down on the Gulf, but it seems like in Destin, it looks pretty bad right now.
Yeah, if it keeps up, it could eventually circle around and head up the East Coast, too. Who knows?
I know. I mean, it's terrible. I heard it could be in the Florida Keys by August. And, you know, the East Coast is beautiful, too. I mean, I love Florida. I love to go down and get away.
It's a great state.
Yeah, it is, and hopefully I'll be out in L.A. before too long this summer. So,
well, either maybe. You track me down, Gary.
Mention
your website, if you would, sir.
Yeah, it's www.rgarypatterson.com.
We turn to Gary whenever we have a major story that has to do with the industry or music, and he's always there for us. And any predictions on who the next superstar is going to be?
No, if I could do that, I could make $1 million, you know, for the recording.
You'd be in the record industry, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, they need a lot of superstars. You know, we sit there and we think about the Beatles, you know, when they came from just about nothing. And when they hit after the Ed Sullivan Show, you know, they were selling millions of albums. They still do. So, you know, I think the recording industry needs another Beatles. I don't know if there will ever be another group like the Beatles, because in this one perfect city of Liverpool, you had the four guys who got together that could change the world all in a town. I have no idea how that could ever happen again. How many times that the whole technique of recording from Sgt. Pepper's and everything else changed. And it would be great if we could go to this golden renaissance of rock and roll and have something else happen. I know I've been waiting, George. I think you too.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe we need an Ed Sullivan, too, to introduce them. So we've got open lines for you. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East, 800-825-5033. First-time caller, 818-501-4721. The wild card line is 818-501-4109. And Skype, George, 97313. Well, listen to this one. A European lawmaker says government should stop covering up information about UFOs and let the public know the truth. Mario Borsizio, an Italian member of the European Parliament, says the EU should simply have its own X-Files center where anyone can look at the information gathered on unexplained sightings in the sky. He said he's seeking the support of other lawmakers from the 736-member assembly for a statement calling on governments to act and act now. So far, he has collected only a couple dozen signatures supporting his measure, but he says his colleagues will come around. That's pretty interesting. Next hour, Patrick Cook joins us. We talk about prophecy, world events, and also the biblical UFO connection on Coast to Coast AM. When I come right back, it's Open Lines. And welcome back. Let's go to Costa Mesa. Let's go to Sam. Sam, welcome. Well, there you go. Hi, Sam.
Yes.
Take it away. Go ahead, Sam.
The other week, I was by myself watching TV up pretty late, and I noticed something in the corner of my eye, and I saw an older gentleman, probably 70, 70, 75, and he was, you know, dressed probably from the 1700s, like a really, really nice, like, kind of suit type thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And these really, really nice black shoes, you know. And I didn't really know what to do. I kind of wanted to contact him, you know, like, try to talk to him, see where he's from. And actually, my brother had seen a woman dressed from around the 1800s, like Civil War.
All at the same time, Sam?
Yeah.
Sounds like the whole ghostly group was there, huh?
Yeah. And, I wanted to try to talk to them, but I don't really know how to talk to them. I want to try to find out.
Well, it's trying to talk to them is one thing. Having them talk to you is something else. Let's go to Robin in Oakland, California. Welcome to the show, Robin. Hi there.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, George.
Of course, that's what I do.
Oh, you are the best. Do you know what I wanted to bring to mind? You had mentioned a couple of weeks ago in our collective thinking of the Coast to Coast family about the oil spill.
Yes.
And I have been passing this along to everyone that I know. And that is that when you think of the oil spill, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
When I think of the oil spill?
Right.
That for me, that it'll never end.
Well, and also that picture on television of the oil coming out
shooting
of that pipe.
Shooting out, yeah.
Right. And so what I have been telling everyone is when you think of the oil spill, and we're all thinking of it, see that pipe and no oil coming out. See nothing but clear water.
Wouldn't it be incredible if there was an earthquake there and it sealed it by itself?
You know, we can do anything with our mind. We are down to the forces of light and darkness. And I honestly think that with the incredible powers that we have been endowed with, that if we use our minds to visualize nothing but clear water and that oil not even there, that we can actually make it stop.
Well, you might be right, Robin, and we've used this technique before, and it's been pretty darn successful. We'll see what happens. Dave is in Whittier, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, George.
Sure.
1963, November 22nd, I heard this from a Dallas policeman, and that's why I give it so much validity. J.D. Tippit was most likely not killed where they say he was killed. If you can picture in your mind the pictures running of Kennedy's motorcade, and you can see the motorcycle policemen that were around it, when the shots rang out, you know, one of them was sprayed with Kennedy's brains. Well, what they have pictures, and I've seen them, but you don't see this all the time, of one of the motorcycle cops taking off and going real fast before Kennedy's limousine took off, and the driver sped up. Before that happened, one of the motorcycle cops goes around the back of the picket fence. You got to remember, they were only a quarter mile from the Dallas police station. Mm-hmm. So this cop knew the area. Anyway, that is where the motorcycle, that's where the Dallas police officer was killed that day, right there behind the picket fence. And that information comes from a Dallas policeman.
Tell me, Dave, where? I haven't seen that.
Okay. The picture the motion picture I'm talking about, it may be the Zapruder film or part of the Zapruder film that shows the motorcycle cop I'm talking about. Now, you obviously can't see anything that happens behind the fence. Now, when Jim Mars comes on this year, he may be aware of this. If you see the film, because I heard you were going to see it, of two men in Dallas, two men in Dallas with Roger Craig, who was the Dallas detective that was on foot approximately 400 or 500 yards from the shooting. He alludes to it. And on the film, he alludes to that Dallas motorcycle cop.
Well, you know what? We have known and have believed for years that this was a triangular shoot on the president. But, you know, I don't think, David, we will ever get the real truth.
Well,
most of the witnesses are dead now.
George, here's the thing. Just like Jim Mars, I heard him say, I believe it was last year, we know what happened. It's just a matter of whether or not publicly the government is going to come out and say that.
Do you think they ever will?
It's really not as important. It's just like with 9/11. You're not going to hear them publicly admit that, but when you see the film of that day, that they will never be able to get rid of, the proof is there, George.
Well, the proof has always been there, David. It's always been there, but they're not going to say. However Kennedy was killed, whether it was the mob or groups, who knows, they're not going to say that. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland, east of the Rockies. It's Tony's turn. Good morning, Tony.
Hi, Mr. George. How you doing?
Okay. All is okay.
You having a good night, I hope?
Just starting, but yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, something I wanted to bring to your attention. I was on the net a little while ago, and I was reading some of Alex Jones's stuff, and found a very, very disturbing little news blurb about the police in Albany teaming up with some National Guard, and they're also being observed by police, no, excuse me, Polish armed forces, and they're starting to stop cars looking for quote-unquote drugs and guns, and starting to, like, try to get people acclimated to this. anybody listening, I think they should be, you know, start calling up and screaming at D.C. going, like, you know, stop this now.
Is that the story where they're also looking for guns and they want to drugs? I know, but I mean guns also, that they want to seize and confiscate guns.
That's part of it. Yeah, there are three different little news blurbs. You know, when you go to like the home site and it like they flash by. There's three different like army or armed services kind of stuff. You know, like where they're going and saying, you know, Polish armed services, you know, working with the National Guard, and the National Guard working with the police.
Yeah, it's bizarre. They claim these are foreign troops doing exercises. And
what are they doing exercises for? I mean, they shouldn't be allowed. This is America.
Of course not. Of course not. And by the way, I have found out that you remember a few weeks ago we talked about how 17 Afghan soldiers who were in training have disappeared in this country. Now I'm told it's closer to 70.
Great.
And they don't know where they are. What are they doing?
Well, they're probably going to appear right before the election. And you know,
who knows?
Our election.
Who knows? Tony, thanks for that. Let's go to Houston, Texas. It's Stephanie on the wild card line. Hi, Steph. How are you?
I was just calling in retrospect to your previous guest talking about Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And, you know, like who you think's going to be new. Anyway, I was just thinking in retrospect, Madonna always changed her image over and over and over. And so did Michael Jackson.
She still is.
What?
And Madonna still is. She knows how to evolve.
Exactly. I said reinvent herself, and the screener didn't understand what I meant, but you're my age. But you know what I mean.
Well, my screener's 18, so he doesn't know.
There you go. Reinvent, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, change over, you know. Anyway, but Madonna did it, and so did Michael Jackson, and I think that's why Lady Gaga just might go there.
I think she will, too. I think she
will.
I think her musical change, you know, she seems to be coming out with a hit every time.
I know. I don't even know one song, even though I have teenage girls.
Well,
I just listen to your talk radio station.
She's got Bad Romance. That was a hit. She's got Poker Face. That was a hit. She's got another one out called Alejandro. That was a hit.
And you said something about the Beatles. You know, they did. They made it. But you know what? Madonna is the one that started music videos.
Absolutely. Oh, she was huge. She was huge. You got it.
And by the way, there are no oil globs in Galveston.
Good. Yet. Let's go to Sharon. She's in Chicago. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what's up?
Good. Well, I live in Chicago, and I'm sure you've heard of the Street Lakeshore Drive, which runs north and south of Lake Michigan. And three times this week, they've had to close off traffic.
Why?
Because the pavement has buckled.
Oh.
Which is strange, because I've lived here all my life. I've never seen it do that.
And buckling in a big way, or just little bumps?
Buckling in a big way, where they had to like switch traffic to another lane to fix it three times.
Maybe something's happening deep down.
That's what I'm wondering.
That's interesting.
So I wanted to bring it up to you because I know you're doing a lot of stuff on this, and I don't know, maybe it'll help somebody somewhere.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
We'll keep on that one, would you?
Okay, thanks.
All right. Next up, we've got Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. First-time caller, it's Rod. Good morning, Rod. Go ahead.
Morning, George. Yes, about some dreams. I just want to try to keep it brief as possible. I have five children, rich man's family.
Well, congratulations.
I'm sorry, yeah. But and the first three were 3 years apart. My son was born first. And as my wife was going through, you know, the pregnancy, I kept having this dream every night of this big hand coming out of the sky and shaking my hand. And I couldn't figure it out. I just didn't figure it out. So then my son was born. I gave him his name, Benjamin. And then she became pregnant 3 years later with a daughter. The dream never came back. The third child was a boy. And we didn't know, you know, we didn't find out in the future. It was just, you know, we're going to find out when it's born. So then when my third child was on its way, I had this dream again about this big hand, but it was every night. So I said, well, let me look around in the dream. Let me spend some time and look around. And as each night as I would dream it, I got a little more, a wider picture. And what it was, is I was a little baby. I was about 9 months old, and I had an uncle who was 12 years old.
Okay.
And he was suffering from leukemia, and they brought him home to die. And I looked around, I saw all these, you know, the big hospital wheels, fireplace, and then his hand, it was his hand laid out off of the hospital bed, and he shook my hand.
Oh.
And it was a pact. In other words, an agreement. And I believe God answered his wish because I understood what the dream was about. He said, name your son after me.
How about
because
that?
He was dying. And then also, I had three other dreams. One of an aunt, she was dying, and I was dreaming, and she came into my dream, and she said, why didn't you come and visit me? And I said, I will just bring death to you. And then she never said anything after that. And then I found out that night she had died. And then I had a great uncle. In my dream, he died September 21st, 1993. And I was asleep. And in my dream, I was in his garage. And he had, you know, a lot of tools. He was a construction worker. And he said, I wanted to give you this. And I wanted to give you that. Not I want to. I wanted to give you this. I wanted to give you that. And then I woke up the next day and found out he had passed away. So he came to me in my dream saying, I wanted to give you these tools before I died.
Man, you're tuned into all of them.
And then there was another one where I had a crush on this girl. And
don't tell me she died.
Yeah, she was about 8 or 10 years older than I was. So when I was 10 years old, she was like 18, beautiful woman. And I was playing guitar for her, serenading. She was sitting in this lawn chair, and there were these two great white pillars. They were very bright. And she was just sitting there smiling, but I couldn't get too close to her. I think it was out of respect, and she was smiling, and, you know, I didn't touch her. But then I realized after the dream, because when I woke up the next day, I found out she had passed away.
Jeez, Todd, do me a favor. Don't dream of anybody else that
so,
we know or you know.
But anyway, I think the white pillars, because I couldn't see the top of them, I believe that there were angels standing there guarding her so I couldn't soil her or touch her.
Well, you know, you know in the dream state, incredible things happen. And you become very intuitive. Things, you get messages, you pass messages on, and that's happening to you. You're picking up these things. But really, I'm serious. Don't dream of anybody that I know at all. I think we have time for one more quick call in Slipknot, Iowa. Janet, I've got only a minute for you. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George. Uh-huh. I didn't get a chance to make it back to Copper Harbor, Lake Superior for the 4th of July. And I thought to myself, you know, you're all over the world. There's a lot of people that come for the fireworks for the 4th.
Sure.
Over Porter's Island, basically, if you look north, okay, at night, after dark, I would say after midnight, there's a star that appears to move in July and August, like with the breeze. And I want to know if anyone's ever seen it.
It might be the International Space Station, if you're
seeing it. No. This is all my life. No,
oh.
I've seen it. We actually did see the International Space Station.
Okay.
Back in the day, or last year, for like just a second. But no, this is something that we'd see every year.
Is it Jupiter, Mars?
I had an uncle who actually knows navigation and so forth, and had been in the Air Force, and he came out to look at it. He said, there must be some explanation, and we never spoke of it again. So that's my mystery. Just kind of curious if anyone knows about that. It's over Lake Superior. Copper Harbor, as you look north, it'd be kind of between Porter's Island and Hunter's Point.
You got it. Okay, if anybody calls in, we've got open lines on Friday, so somebody might check in with us on that, too. Up next, Patrick Cook joins us. We'll talk about prophecy and how it relates to world events.